Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me the illustrious and, I would say, attorney extraordinaire, Andrew Lieb of Lieb at Law. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Like, after that introduction, I don't know how you couldn't be phenomenal. I'm actually going to change
phenomenal.
Twitter handle. I'm going to change my Twitter handle. It's going to be illustrious attorney. I like that. That's very sexy. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Andrew, you know, that we have this new rental law that came about.
You want to talk about that?
I know. I want to go on to this, you know, to educate, you know, a lot of the landlords and landladies out there that are thinking about next year with the rental situation and renting their properties. But now with this new law, it's a different ball of wax. You want to give us a little description about the law?
Well, first of all, the law is 74 pages, and it's single-spaced. So anything we talk about right now is only going to be a small microcosm of the law. But the best thing I could tell them to do is work with a real estate broker like yourself that knows how to walk through the minefield. And what the type of thing you're going to tell them, John, I imagine you tell them already, is that they can't collect more than 1 month's prepaid rent or security. That's numero uno, most important thing for the people out there. I don't know if you heard me, but no more than 1 month, people.
Well, what happens? Like, we've got these rentals here, $250,000 for the season, $300,000, you know, I've seen $500,000. And you're saying 1 month of security? How do you determine that?
So, first of all, I've seen one up to $1.2 million. So I just want to tell you how crazy this is. But you're using the word seasonal rental. And that's a major issue going on. Why? Because there's no such thing as a seasonal rental. There's multiple months combined into a season. So when you say seasonal rental, you're usually talking about a three-month rental. Am I correct?
Exactly.
All right, so a three-month rental, if you divide it by three, is actually just three-month leases. So if you did a lease for $60,000 for 3 months, that would be three $20,000 leases. And what this new law says is prior to occupancy, assuming it was a $60,000 for 3 months, the most you could get is $20,000 before someone takes occupancy. And if you take more, what's the consequence, John? Who cares? The law, who cares? What do you think the consequence is?
I don't have a clue.
Well, the consequence is
I do.
If you willfully violate, if you willfully violate the law, John, willfully, that means try to circumvent it, you could get punitive damages of twice the amount you took.
Wow. That is incredible.
You know what
isn't
that
it?
Is?
Yep, sure, yeah.
Well, let's just do the math. So let's assume that you took the $60,000
right.
in advance, and you were only allowed to take $20,000. That means you took $40,000 more than you were supposed to, right?
Exactly.
Which is $80,000. But then you also owe the money back, which is $40,000. So you could be on the hook for $120,000 on a $60,000 lease.
So
think that's a good idea?
That's double what you thought you were getting.
Crazy talk, right?
Yeah, right. So what happens? You don't do that.
Well, if they're working with someone smart like yourself, what you're going to tell them, because a good broker knows to tell them this, hey, landlord, this stinks. You got a lot more risk right now, because if you're not getting the whole money up front, there's a possibility the tenant's not going to pay, and you're going to have to retroactively sue them. So what should you do, landlord? You should charge $70,000 for the season, not $60,000, because we all know from basic economics, when there's more risk, there's more reward.
Right. That's a very good idea. Okay. Now, there's another thing with the security deposit that a landlord must, within 14 days after the tenant has vacated the premises, you know the rest?
So, it's interesting you're bringing that up. You're only giving a subsection. What you're talking about is the return of the security deposit. And again, I want to advise that prepaid rent and security deposit are the same thing under the law. But what the new law does is it gives three inspections. Did you know that? Three
yeah.
different ones. In between lease signing and occupancy, the tenant is allowed one inspection. And if the tenant wants that inspection, they're allowed to have a separate agreement, not just the lease, of the condition of the property. Then there's a second inspection, John. In between the second to last and first to last week before the end of the lease, you do a second inspection. And you got to give the tenant a report of all the problems with the property and give them that 1 week plus the opportunity to fix it. And then, John, what you were referring to is within 14 days of the end of the lease, you have to return their money, their security deposit, or you have to itemize how much you are claiming for security that you can be able to take for the damages. But if you didn't do inspection one and two, you don't even get to inspection three in the 14-day issue.
So what happens?
What happens is that the tenant gets their money back. They go to court and they say, hey, Your Honor, I wasn't given this inspection. And the landlord goes, but you burned down my house. And the judge goes, did you give them the inspection? And they go, no. And they get their money back anyway.
So it sounds like being a landlord is becoming more difficult with these new laws.
So, yes, more difficult, absolutely. More risky, more so. But more importantly, it's becoming an opportunity. And this is where I think a lot of the landlords are missing this boat. And here's where the opportunity is. Professional landlords, people that know what they're doing, that abide by the rule, go above board, they're going to be making a steal. They're going to be doing great. You know why? They're going to stay in business. And people that cut corners and don't follow the rules and they get sued, they're going to go out of business. And landlords that know what they're doing are going to swoop in and get the properties on below market value, and they're going to be able to build their empire. I got one for you, a special treat, John. I wasn't going to tell you this, but you're John Christopher, and it's time to tell you.
Okay.
On the governor's desk today, there's a new bill. It was already passed by the Senate and the Assembly. On the governor's desk, and I imagine maybe even by the time this is broadcast, it's going to be signed. It says that if you rent a property without a CO, you can't collect rent.
Wow.
So wow. Wow,
so
I just blew your mind.
So wait a second. So you're saying before the person can rent, and they've rented the place last year, they have to have a new CO? Is this annually?
No, not a new one.
No?
No, not an annual one, just a legal one. So you know how many houses have you went into, and you go, that is a fabulous downstairs apartment you have there. But it's an illegal basement. How many places have you walked into and you go, your pool house is astonishing, but it's actually a shed? How many times have you went to that great living room and then they open the garage door? What they're saying is that these people that do illegal conversions, now a tenant's going to have even more rights. The law keeps piling up. It's a tenant-friendly state. But I'm going to tell you something interesting, John. Up until this year, we were only the 37th ranked state as far as tenant protection. Only number 37. So it's not like the laws were so tenant favorite to start off with. Now we're entering an era, though, where we're coming into the top five, if not number one, as New York State in tenant protection.
Wow. That is very interesting. Well, you know, what would you suggest? Like, if I was a landlord, my suggestion, if I had any questions, is to talk to, obviously, a real estate agent. But also, if they wanted to get some legal advice, how could they get that?
So I think what you just said is brilliant. They need to have a team. They need a real estate broker, and they need an attorney. And the real estate broker, John Christopher, of course, and you could always reach me at Leave It Law at 646-216-8009. And you work together with a team because the attorney needs to help you draft the lease, make sure it's legal, and show you what you can and you can't do as far as the terms. And then the broker needs to go out there and effectuate those terms while protecting you the whole time. As a team, you can make a lot of money as a landlord. This is opportunity knocking. The people that are informed will make money. The people who are not will go out of business.
That is so apropos. Andrew Lieb, it's a delight, as always, having you on the program. You're very educational and very enlightened, and I look forward to seeing you soon. This is John Christopher for Real Life Broadcasting on the only NPR station on Long Island, WPPB 88.3 FM. We'll be right back after this short break with our next guest, Silicon Valley's top producer, Mike Riviello.
Support for 88.3 comes from Sotheby's International Realty, local experts worldwide. With over 100 international offices, Sotheby's has four Hamptons locations in Southampton, Bridgehampton, Easthampton, and Sag Harbor. Learn more at john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Silicon Valley's top producer, Mike Riviello. Mike, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, John?
I'm great.
It's a pleasure being with you today. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you. So what's it like out there in California now?
Well, in terms of weather, it's still in the 60s in the Bay Area and on the peninsula, and a lot of sunny days so far. We haven't had our rainy season hasn't really started yet. So it's almost like spring in New York.
Oh.
a little different than what's going on now.
Yeah, New York, right? Well, we're heading into the, what do they call that season? Winter?
Exactly.
And your winter is not our winter.
No. Our winter is more like your probably April, late March and April.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's the worst of it. Anyway.
So normally I talk about the Hamptons and the Manhattan market since there's a symbiotic relationship. But today I thought our listeners would be interested in knowing about the most expensive dirt in the U.S., and it's not Sagaponack. But before we get enlightened about that expensive dirt, Mike, let's talk about you. Can you give us a little brief history of yourself?
Yeah, well, do we have an hour, John?
No, let's...
No, actually...
We can do four shows, okay?
Yeah, right. I was born and raised in Silicon Valley in Menlo Park, which is right next to Stanford University. And it's the epicenter of venture capital. I was educated on the East Coast in Boston and in New York, in Manhattan, at grad school. And I spent 10 years in the financial services industry in New York and 10 years then back in Silicon Valley in the startup world. And the last several years, I've been selling luxury high-end real estate in Silicon Valley.
What made you gravitate to that?
I just love, I love different, I love real estate. I love homes that are in beautiful places. I like not only in the Bay Area, but places in New York, the Hamptons, the Cape. And I just love selling people really a lifestyle more so than just a home or a second home or a third home.
Well, let's talk about the Silicon Valley.
Sure.
You're a top producer there. But most people think of it as a place on a map, and it's not. So what is Silicon Valley? I mean, give us a description.
Yeah. Silicon Valley is really a state of mind, and it also is then a physical place. But let me just go through the state of mind. It's a place where new ideas from around the world come. We have a lot of available capital because of the venture capital industry. And then we have top universities such as Stanford and Berkeley. Geographically, Silicon Valley really extends from San Francisco, which is at the tip of the peninsula, down to San Jose, and it's all the suburbs in between, or towns in between those two cities. It comprises probably 3.5 million people, roughly. So it's really not you don't have it on a map, but it's truly a state of mind, and it's made up of several towns, except for San Francisco being the second most densely populated city in the country after New York, and then San Jose, which is about 1 million people. So it's really made up of suburbs or towns.
Hmm.
And I also think that that Silicon Valley is truly a state of mind. I mean, people come from around the world to seek out capital, putting companies together. So that's the kind of vibe that we have here.
Right. Well, you know, here in the Hamptons, we don't necessarily do price per square foot like they do in New York City. But can you give us an idea of what, for example, $3 million, can that buy you? That can buy you a substantial home here in the Hamptons. But what can it buy you in Silicon Valley?
Okay, well, the best example I give you is where I grew up in Menlo Park. So think of it as a town of 20,000 people. It's right next to Stanford. It is the epicenter for venture capital. But the average home here that was built in the 50s and 60s, like the one I grew up in, is probably 2,800 square feet, 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths. That house would sell for $4 million and upwards if it was on the market today, and that's an older house. A new house on the same property, and that's about 1/4 acre, a new house on that same property would be about $6 to $8 million.
So wait a second. What you're saying is there are deals to be had here in the Hamptons as compared to buying in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Well, the difference is, though, as you know, Silicon Valley is a primary market, whereas the Hamptons is a secondary market. But, I'd say there are, I look at the Hamptons market having been out there and having you shown me around, too, that it's an incredible buy right now. And many of the clients I have who have second and third homes in other parts of California and the country should be looking at the market in the Hamptons. It's a beautiful place. It has some of the best beaches in the world. And so, it's, I think, on sale.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, I just read one of the FANG companies was offering a bonus to move to the suburbs of Silicon Valley for their employees.
Right.
What are the suburbs of Silicon Valley? Where are they? And are they that substantially lower priced than, say, I think...
Atherton.
Atherton, right.
Yeah. Well, Atherton is one of those suburbs or one of those towns. But think of it as San Francisco. So think of it as San Francisco being like Manhattan, and then everything south of San Francisco, about 40 miles south until you get to San Jose, are made up of several towns. Those are all considered suburbs, in my mind, of Silicon Valley, because Silicon Valley really isn't, you know, a physical place. It's really that state of mind. Mm-hmm. So when I read this, that they're offering bonuses to move to the suburbs, they may be indicating, you know, getting out of San Francisco and going to the suburbs. You know, so
would Oakland be considered a suburb?
No, it's just, I think it's part of the MSA of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And Oakland, it's another city. Not as, you know, San Francisco is only 800,000 people as the city itself. And the entire Bay Area is about 7.7 million people, still a lower population than
Manhattan,
New York, right?
So
I think, you know, I'm not sure. And then Atherton is a suburb and a town in Silicon Valley. It's the most expensive town in Silicon Valley. It's probably averages, the median home price in Atherton is over $6.5 million. But truly, and the property, you can get an acre. But an acre of land on the in the right part of Atherton is $8 million without a house.
Without a house, just the land
without
itself.
Just the land
it's
itself.
It's amazing. What's the average length of time that a house is on the market there?
You know, and this is another stunning statistics. Our days on market is under 30 and has been. For the last several years. In fact, we just came out of a period of the last few months where the average days on market was maybe pushing 30, but in the last several weeks we've seen a change and it's coming down again. So average days on market is between 15 and 30.
Jeez,
for
that's
any
amazing.
Of those towns, any of those towns.
So people have to come in with their offer, and is there any bidding wars going on, or is that?
Last season, or 2018, there was more of a bidding war status. Now there isn't as much. It's becoming more, the market's adjusted. I still think it's a seller's market, but especially if the home is priced right and then it's in the right neighborhood. But we're still seeing some multiple offers, not at the frenzy we saw last year.
Right. We should have you come back on the program again, Mike. But in the meantime, if someone wants to reach you to learn more about your market, how could they?
I'm just finishing up my website, which is mikeriviello.evrealestate.com, and I'll probably have it up in a few weeks, and I'll be focusing on properties from Silicon Valley and also different parts of the country, like the Hamptons, places that I think some of my buyers should be looking at.
Wonderful. Mike Riviello, it's a pleasure having you on the program. This is John Christopher on Real Life, and we are on the only NPR station on Long Island, WPPB 88.3 FM. We'll be right back after the short break with my next guest, Chief Economist of Terra Holdings, Greg Heim. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I have with me Chief Economist for Terra Holdings, Greg Heim. Hi, Greg. How are you tonight?
Hey, John. How you doing out there?
I'm doing great. You know, Greg, the last time you were on the show, which was at the beginning of the summer, we were talking about corrections in the market. Now we're celebrating Thanksgiving. Is there anything we can give thanks to when it comes to real estate market in the city? Have you seen any correction yet?
Well, we had a massive swing since the last time we spoke. There were new transfer and mansion taxes that, thankfully for you guys, only affect New York City. So everybody and, you know, everybody they knew all tried to rush before the end of June to close because they were taking effect July 1st. So we had the best June ever for luxury sales in New York. I think that sellers saw an opportunity to get buyers' attention. And, you know, these mansion tax increases were up to 290% on the rate for the above $5 million transactions. So people really wanted to get a deal done. Sellers were receptive. And it was a great second quarter in terms of the number of deals. The third quarter, you know, I don't know if you saw the headlines out there, but words like bloodbath and terrible were used because you rob transactions from third quarter and push them to the second quarter.
Right.
So the market was very quiet in the high end. We saw a 48% decline in closings for $5 million or more compared to the third quarter of last year. Again, a lot of that's to be expected, but it doesn't explain all of the decline. I think prices have finally found where they need to be for a lot of these different types of products that have been sitting around, new developments, east side co-ops. And, you know, we were waiting for this correction that has been taking 3 years, and it's been so slow. I think that we're finally feeling that we're pretty much there. But, you know, there's still all this noise going on that is really, you know, affecting people's decisions.
Yeah, but do you think it's a part of it is the media? Because out here, the media, there was an article recently saying that the high-end homes are just, you know, lingering in the Hamptons. And if you look at the data that I've seen, it's not the case whatsoever. Are high-end co-ops and condos moving in Manhattan now?
Not like they were. Again, part of that is of the transactions happening a couple of months earlier to pay lower taxes. But I think also it's not the time of the year where people tend to make big decisions, especially as you approach Thanksgiving and then the rest of the holidays over the next month or so. And I think that, you know, look, you have an impeachment hearing going on. You have trade talks that seem to be taking forever, a Brexit that is going on 3 years. A lot of things that people are zeroed in on. At the other end of the spectrum is an economy that is still doing fairly well, unemployment rates that are still below 4% in the U.S. Even here in New York City, the unemployment rate's 4.1%, a stock market that keeps flirting with new records. I mean, it's very hard for people to feel totally informed when you have such, you know, different ends of the spectrum. And I think with media, it's so accessible. You can get alerts. People can text you things. It's just in your face 24/7. And I think that just makes people a little more leery, even with everything we have going for us.
You mentioned taxes. I know supposedly people are leaving New York in droves now and going
yes.
to states with lower taxes. Do you think that's having an effect on the real estate market in Manhattan and boroughs?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the data that we've seen shows us that it is the high earners that are leaving, and that would make sense. So that has really hurt a lot of the domestic demand, is this out-migration. The other thing is, you know, this threat of a pied-à-terre tax. There was a bill that didn't get passed in the session that ended in April, but the sponsor of that bill has been talking about it again, and that would be really hurtful to our market because the domestic demand has been hurt by tax reform. The pied-à-terre buyers, many of whom are foreign buyers, aren't impacted by that. So it's almost like we're looking at every buyer of high-end apartments and almost giving them a disincentive. So I think it's a concern. We'll see what happens with that. I think that the demand is still there. I think the people are waiting for the right time and the best deal. And I would say to the buyers out there, particularly in Manhattan, make an offer. Really see the value. You're never going to get the bottom, whether it's stocks or real estate or anything you buy. But if you're buying now in Manhattan, you can feel confident, especially the higher price you're looking at, that you're getting the best deal in years because sellers have not been this negotiable, and developers, for a very long time.
Is that because of the overbuilding by developers, do you think?
In part, but it all boils down to having a market that for most of the last 10 years has done nothing but go up.
Right.
You need corrections so people can get back in. I think you've seen it in your market. We've seen it in the stock market. Look at the end of last year, and we may have talked about this in May, but people saw a really bad correction at the end of last year in stocks, and it was the best January in 30 years that followed it because people said, wow, I can get back in. I think now buyers are seeing that. It's just not the time of year in our market where things change much.
Right.
It's a slow time. I think you really never know in Manhattan where you're at until the spring season hits. But, you know, I can tell you that inventory, you know, is at a level that is about double what it is nationally in terms of month supply of homes for sale. It's still sitting at around 8 months compared to a little over 4 months nationwide. So that's a concern even with the strong economy, interest rates that have come down significantly. You know, the stock market, we have bonuses. You always start thinking about this. That's big for your market out there as well. We know that Wall Street, the hiring has not come back like the rest of the cities has. And this is the time of year where they tend to shed jobs. But, you know, they're making money, and they will pay bonuses.
Right. I heard that also. Right. That's interesting.
I mean, look, yeah. The stocks are sitting at records. So there's money that's being made there. It's just fewer people getting that money.
Any advice you can give to a seller? Suppose somebody wants to sell their house or condo or whatever. You know?
Right. You have to forget about how you feel about it. I hate to say it like that, but the buyers out there are looking for value. They're not concerned with what you paid or what necessarily you're looking. You have to see, and obviously your agent can help you with this, what's gone into contract recently. Because that'll tell you where your prices need to be to get the interest. And then you have to be negotiable. You know, it doesn't mean you can't sell in this market. I think, you know, when people see the headlines about how prices are declining, that will bring some people back in that have been waiting. But if the value doesn't jump out at them, I think, you know, you have to be serious about selling, and you have to be in it, you know, to sell. People testing waters, trying a price, trying to bring it down slowly. You know, buyers have all that information. They can go to a number of different sites, know how long you've been on. And if you drop the price once, they'll just assume you're
going
to have to drop it again.
Yeah. I know you're not Zoltar, but if you were, what do you see for 2020?
Well, I don't see a lot changing because I think the things on people's minds are still going to linger. I think there's still going to be the bad feelings coming out of Washington. We'll probably still be talking about trade negotiations. Maybe Brexit will be done by then. I think that people are waiting, feeling that a recession is imminent. And so far, the early estimates of GDP are barely anything. They're not negative, but they're not really that positive. 10 years into an economic growth cycle, you know a slowdown is going to happen at some point.
It's inevitable.
You're going to see a recession.
Right.
And with all the talk, although the yield curve is no longer inverted, you know, I think that people who want to believe stuff, there's a lot of evidence on either side. You can point to both, like I said earlier, there's two competing points of view. You know, one, you look at the hard data and you go, well, this looks good. I don't know why I should be concerned when the unemployment rate is so low. But then people say on the other side, well, we have an impeachment going on. We have this going on with that. Washington's dysfunctional, whatever people want to point to. So I think that sellers, you have to let value be seen and get aggressive and know where your competition is. It's a competition between you and these other apartments or homes, and you have to play to win because buyers are savvy. They want value, and if they don't see it, they'll wait. They with inventory levels this high, they don't feel a lot of push.
Exactly. Greg Heim, Chief Economist for Terra Holdings. It's always a pleasure having you on the program. This is John Christopher, and I can't believe that we're wrapping up our 9th year of Real Life. It's ironic that we're doing this on Thanksgiving weekend, since it's a time for giving thanks. And that's what I want to do. I have quite a few people I want to give thanks to. One of them is Dr. Wally Smith, who many people don't realize was the founder of National Public Radio, NPR, when it was just an idea in Wally's mind in a small station in Los Angeles. He's done an outstanding job in shepherding the station through the good times and the bad. My producer and engineer, who I think is fantastic, Kyle Lynch, who without his creativity and technical wizardry, this show would not exist. The staff and DJs here at the station, who are a wonderful group of talented people. My sponsors, Sotheby's International Realty, for their belief, and my new and timely sponsor, DiscriminationPreventionTraining.com group of LEAB compliance. But most importantly, it's you, the listeners. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a joy and a pleasure sharing this time with you. So until next season, when I look forward to seeing you then, remember, have a grateful Thanksgiving and an awesome journey.
You have been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people, places, and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, broker associate with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life is also brought to you in part by LEAP Compliance, HR's one-stop solution for sexual harassment prevention training and policies. All employers in the New York State are now required to train all employees annually, no matter the size of the company. For more information, discriminationpreventiontraining.com or 646-216-8038.